Hey, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I'm just popping in to tell you that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. VPR and Vermont PBS have teamed up to sponsor a new poll about some of the key political races in Vermont in campaign 2020 and a number of important issues. Today in the program, we're going to take a close look at the poll results. First, I'll be joined by Rich Clark, who is a political science professor at Castleton University, and he is the director of the poll. And then a little later in the broadcast, three of some of Vermont's best political reporters will be with us to help us better understand the results. The poll indicates that Governor Phil Scott is the most popular elected government official in Vermont today. Scott's approval rating is 68% compared to a disapproval rating of just 17%. And to put that in perspective, Senator Patrick Leahy has an approval rating of 56% and a disapproval rating of 23%. I had a chance to talk with Rich Clark yesterday afternoon, and I asked him why he thought Scott has emerged this year with such high approval ratings.
Yeah, and they're higher by a significant margin, we should say, too. If you took the approval minus disapproval, you know, he's got a 51-point advantage there. But I think in large part we're seeing what we saw in the previous poll that VPR did, where the public is very supportive of the job he's done handling COVID-19, which is, you know, the most salient issue in the minds of most of our citizens. And race relations, too, he did very well. We saw that he continues to maintain support among Democrats, almost to the point where you could look and say Democrats are his base as a factor of these approvals.
In fact, in the approval poll numbers, Rich, we saw that more Democrats give him a higher mark than Republicans do.
That's correct. And I think, you know, in part the Democrats – rewarding him not just for his leadership, but the stand he's taken against the president, or at least his verbal chastisements of the president from time to time. And that may have hurt him a bit with the Vermont Republicans, at least the Republicans who are really strong Trump supporters, but it's endeared him with a Democratic base.
And do you think voters are rewarding his decision to take a very cautious and slow approach to reopening the Vermont economy, as opposed to in some other states we see governors moving very quickly and voters pushing them to do that?
I think so. I think steady leadership is always rewarded. And we see that – we saw when Peter Shumlin was at his highest approvals, it was after Irene, when there is a some sort of national or state emergency, we look to the leaders, we're ready to give them the benefit of the doubt. So the fact that he's held these regular press briefings and he's kept focus on the issue at hand and hasn't strayed, I think he's been rewarded for that.
So, Rich, do we have a situation where voters may feel they can disagree with Governor Phil Scott on specific issues, maybe paid family leave, raising the state minimum wage, the global warming emission reduction bill, but despite those differences, these voters still approve of the job that he's doing?
Yeah, well, I think we have probably fewer single-issue voters in Vermont than you'll find in some states. And I think the salient issue of the day today, COVID-19, is the issue where he's had a high approval. So I think he's been rewarded from that, and people are ready to say, well, these other things are important, but they're not going to trump the issue of the day. Gallup came out with a poll the other day that showed that for in the United States that the public favors the Democrats on handling the issues that they find most important, and mostly that was due to COVID. And so I think that's probably we don't have a good measure on that, but I think that's probably what we're seeing happening here in Vermont.
And Rich, the VPR Vermont PBS poll contains some head-to-head contests. First, the one for governor. Incumbent Republican Phil Scott had a big lead over his Democratic opponent, David Zuckerman. If the election was held today, Scott would win by a margin of 55% to 24% for Zuckerman. That's more than a 2-to-1 lead. Are you surprised by that, especially in a state that has a Democratic legislature, two Democratic U.S. senators, and a Democratic congressman?
I wouldn't say I'm overly surprised. No, we saw that. He's won a second term against a Democratic candidate by a fairly good margin, and it's early. People haven't tuned in. We have still a high rate of undecided. 16% are saying they're just not sure. And, you know, unlike the presidential race where I think the public is decided, I think there's still time for them to weigh in. They haven't seen the debates yet, and they haven't got to do that sort of balancing act that will go into the decisions when they fill out their ballot.
It's been almost 60 years since Vermont voters have failed to reelect an incumbent governor. That was back in 1962. There were a number of factors at play in that election.
Sure.
Do you think it's critical for a challenger like Zuckerman to present a case of why the incumbent does not deserve another term in office?
Well, I'm betting you would say Philip Huff won in 62 more as a case that his Republican opponent lost. And I think what we've seen in Vermont is that an incumbent has to give the public a really good reason to turn them out. Shumlin had a nail-biter, of course, in the year that he faced now Lieutenant Governor candidate Scott Milne. But the incumbent really has to give the public a good reason for turning him out, as we've seen. That's held so far. We can't always expect that what's happened in the past will happen again, but past is prologue in most cases.
Rich, let's take a look at the race for president in the poll. Not surprisingly, Democratic candidate Joe Biden leads incumbent Republican President Donald Trump by a margin of 56% to 32%. Is that pretty much what you would expect?
Yeah. We had asked later in the poll how people voted in 2016. And we see that the people who voted for Donald Trump in 2016 are ready to vote for him again in 2020. But, you know, Hillary Clinton did very well in Vermont in 2016. People who voted against Trump in 2016 are going to vote against him in 2020. And so I think Vermonters understood who he was as a candidate and either liked that or did not like it. And we're going to see them this play out again. What we might see, though, is a higher turnout, or very likely to see a higher turnout this time around, which probably will work against the president in Vermont.
Another fascinating result was the answer to this question. If you're planning on voting for Joe Biden, is it because you support Joe Biden or because you oppose President Trump? 63% of those people supporting Biden said they were doing so because they oppose Trump. Only 30% said it was because they support Biden. What do those results tell you?
But normally you would say that does not bode well for Joe Biden, right? Because we also saw the inverse in that the people who are voting for Donald Trump, two-thirds are saying they're doing that because they are enthused and they support Donald Trump. So to have the inverse there for Biden does not bode well for him, except for the fact that we might see that the passions against the president are strong enough to bring people to the polls just to vote against him.
Rich, let's take a look at the race for lieutenant governor. We've got Democrat Molly Gray, Republican Scott Milne, and we've got a pretty close race. How do you view that one?
Well, in terms of surprises, I had no idea what to expect there, but I was a bit surprised by just how close it is. Again, we see a Republican governor with a strong lead and now a Democratic lieutenant governor with a small lead. We asked at the very beginning of the poll how closely you follow news, and I like that about politics, and I like that question because it's a good – it's one of those proxies we use when we think about who's likely to vote. People who follow the news very closely are likely to vote. Well, among those who are following the news very closely, Gray has even a stronger lead. Among those who are saying they follow it very closely, you have Gray at 47% and Milne at 31%. So that's a bigger gap than we're seeing elsewhere. But we have to keep in mind that's nearly one in four voters say they are not sure. People have not tuned into this race, the presidential election, COVID-19. You can run through a list of things that have taken the oxygen out of the room so that people haven't looked very deeply yet at the lieutenant governor's race. So I think there's a lot of sorting to do still in that race.
Rich, another fascinating question on the poll asks, are you optimistic about the future of your community? 65% said they were optimistic or somewhat optimistic. 22% said they were very or somewhat pessimistic. 12% were undecided. In a time of a national health pandemic and at a time when the state economy has been hit hard by the impact of that pandemic, are you surprised by those numbers?
Not really. We had asked in an earlier poll over the summer if people had some pride in the fact that Vermont was handling COVID as well as it was in comparison to the rest of the country. And I think that's where that optimism comes from, is that, you know, this may not be our ideal situation, but look how well we're doing compared to the rest of the country. And that may be a factor that came out here, that sometimes people see the world in comparative light, you know. The grass is sometimes always – the grass is greener when they – even when people have a good life, they see what's out there. Now they're looking in and saying, boy, it could be a lot worse for us. So this is a I think, not all that surprising to me in that regard.
Rich, there was another question in the poll that asked, how confident are you that the 2020 presidential election will be conducted fairly?
Yeah.
54% said very confident or somewhat confident, but 43% said they were not confident or somewhat not confident. What do you make of those results?
Well, the president has said that if he doesn't win the election, it's because that the there's been some foul play, essentially. And, you know, that's putting a lot in the minds of voters. So there's a lot of concern. And then you think about the concerns about voting by mail and all these other issues that have gone out there. So I think it's disturbing. I think it's you know, the cynicism that we've seen is has played out there. But one thing, the biggest surprise to me in this question, there's not a lot of party difference. That it's, you know, the when you look at the very confident in it, it's, you know, Republicans are slightly more, but it's not a big difference in all of that. The group that is the least confident are independents. Now, again, we have a smaller group of those, so I don't want to put too much into that, but the partisans tend to view this question pretty much the same. I think one side thinking that there'll be mail fraud and the other side thinking that maybe the Russian or outside interference is going to mess with the results.
And Rich, I also saw an interesting breakdown by age on this question. In the age group of 18 to 44, yes, only 40% were confident that the election would be fair. But in the age category over 65, that number increases to 66%.
Yeah, yeah. As a, you know, somebody who teaches college students, this concerns me. It's, you know, I'm hoping that it's a sign of skepticism and not cynicism, and that it passes. But yeah, younger voters tend to have the least confidence in the system.
And Rich, at a time like this, when we see the results of polls like this one, we see differences of opinion across the state on certain issues, and we often see those differences reflected in geographic factors. Maybe the results in Chittenden County would be a little different than the Northeast Kingdom or Rutland County. But some people have noted there are also some very strong differences on issues and candidate preferences based on a person's level of education. And the poll breaks this demographic down into three categories. One, graduated from high school. Two, graduated with an associate's degree and attended some college. Or three, graduated with a bachelor's degree or more. How important a factor is a person's education level in determining their position on candidates and issues?
Well, huge. Part of the problems with state polls back in 2016 was that they weren't weighting on education levels, and we saw that all of a sudden we had a huge split between college graduates and just those with just a high school degree in terms of support, especially at the presidential election. And I think the attacks on science from the current administration has really played into that and created even a greater divide in education. So I should point out that the data that we are looking at have been weighted on education because we think, you know, time or just experience has shown us that education is a major factor in one's political preferences today.
Fascinating look at these poll results. Rich Clark is a political science professor at Castleton University and the director of the VPR Vermont PBS poll. Rich, many thanks for being on the program today.
Well, it's always fun for me, so thank you.
Today, we're looking at the results of the new VPR Vermont PBS poll, including some head-to-head political race results and the results about a number of important issues. And with us now to look at the ramifications of these results, are three reporters who cover state government very closely. With us today, Paul Heintz of 7 Days, Kat Villanzoni of WCAX TV, and VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. Hey, it's great to have you all with us today.
Hey, Bob.
Thanks for having us, Bob.
Paul, let's just start with the approval ratings, where we were just heard of Governor Phil Scott, very high, 68% approved. Just to put that in context, Senator Patrick Leahy is at 56% approved. Senator Bernie Sanders at 61%. Congressman Peter Welch at 57% approval. What do you attribute Scott's incredibly high favorable ratings to, Paul?
Well, they're, you know, they're certainly sky high, and I think they're all the more notable given that Governor Scott has already served most of two terms. Usually you see with incumbents their favorability ratings decreasing over time, but that does not seem to be the case with Governor Scott. You know, the obvious explanation for this, I think, is his reaction to COVID-19. His response to it. And as Rich, I think, mentioned earlier in the program, the poll that VPR Vermont PBS conducted in July, which looked specifically at Governor Scott's handling of COVID-19, showed that 83% thought that he had done a proof of his job performance as it relates to the pandemic, and only 12% disapproved of it. So what we're seeing in these poll numbers, this is a broader look at his overall approval rating, but I've got to imagine that it's driven largely by his response to COVID-19. I will say, however, though, that Governor Scott has been, has had high approval ratings all along, and he's done a really remarkable job of making inroads with independents and Democrats, which is necessary if you're a Republican running in a state like Vermont. You simply cannot win here simply with Republican support. And one of the things that surprised me, or at least I thought was most remarkable about this poll, is that it once again showed that Governor Scott is more has higher approval ratings with Democrats than he does with Republicans. And I think that that's really telling. Similarly, if you look at the head-to-head matchup of Scott versus his opponent, Lieutenant Governor Zuckerman, you see that among Democrats, Scott is actually still beating David Zuckerman, a Democrat slash progressive, about 48-41%. So, you know, when you're a Republican and you're making those kinds of inroads, it's very hard to be defeated.
Kat, Scott's high approval ratings are in direct contrast to Republican incumbent President Donald Trump. Trump's approval rating is 30%. His disapproval is 64%. Has Scott done a pretty good job differentiating his policies with those of President Trump?
I would say yes, he definitely has. You know, we've heard at several of the press conferences that he's held both this summer and, you know, quite frankly, over the past several years where he has openly disagreed with one of the policies that the president has put out. And, you know, most recently he came out and said that he felt that the, you know, Supreme Court justice replacement should not happen until after the election. Of course, that's in breaking with what President Trump would like at this point. And, you know, I think he's been not shy about, you know, speaking his mind when he feels like the president has crossed a line. You know, we heard that with comments about veterans recently, you know, that the governor came out and said that he felt like the president was, you know, not giving them the, you know, the support and the, you know, respect that they deserved. And I think he kind of realizes he has to do this, though, in a state like Vermont, because, you know, as the numbers show in the poll here, you know, if only 30% of Vermonters approve of the job the president is doing, you know, if you're a politician who's a Republican in Vermont, you kind of have to look at that and say, OK, well, if I want to be reelected, is that good for me if I align myself with the president in these moments? So if you, you know, strictly look at the numbers, and if you were strictly a numbers person, you had to take a look at that and say, OK, I need to have a different strategy here.
And, Kat, we have a situation where Phil Scott has made it very clear he did not vote for Donald Trump in 2016. He says he wrote in the name of former Governor Jim Douglas. And at a recent press briefing, he said he might actually vote for Biden this time.
He did. You know, I mean, and I think that is certainly, you know, interesting to see from a Republican, you know, to cross, you know, cross lines and vote for the other side, if you will. But also in keeping, though, with the fact that Governor Scott has, you know, indicated all along that he's not particularly a fan of the president. And if you're, you know, someone who wants to say that you stand by what, you know, putting your vote where your mouth is, so to speak, you know, it's not really that surprising that you would pick someone else to vote for in that moment. Certainly, you know, whether he was going to vote for Biden, I think, was a, you know, up in the air question. And, you know, it sounds like it still is to some extent. But, you know, Biden is not the most progressive of the possible Democratic candidates who could have come out, you know, in this election. So it's not, I think, out of the question that some Republicans, if they are frustrated enough with the current administration, might consider casting a vote for the other side.
Pete, as I just mentioned, we have some head-to-head results, and we could start with the contest for Governor Phil Scott at 55%, David Zuckerman, the Democratic and progressive candidate, at 24%, undecided 16%. That's a pretty good lead for Phil Scott at this point.
I would say it definitely is a pretty good lead. It's interesting, if you look back to the poll that VPR and Vermont PBS conducted in 2018 at about the same time in the cycle, we did a horse race between Phil Scott and then Democratic challenger Christine Hallquist. Phil Scott had a 14-point lead over Hallquist at that point, according to the poll, and went on to win the race by 10 points. Given the fact that he has now a 30-point lead over David Zuckerman, according to this poll, at least, if the election were to be held today, I imagine the Scott camp is feeling pretty comfortable. And what's also interesting is to look at where that support is coming from. Scott is doing well with women. He's doing well with men. He's doing well in different education demographics, different regions of the state. It doesn't really matter how you break it down. Phil Scott continues to have a lead, even with younger voters, voters 18 to 44, that David Zuckerman, a Bernie Sanders protege, presumably would need to do very well in order to unseat a popular incumbent. Phil Scott leads him in that age group as well. And of course, as Paul mentioned, even Democrats at this point are by and large saying that they favor Phil Scott over David Zuckerman. So the Democratic challenger has a hill to climb, and he's going to have to figure out a strategy that a lot of people aren't sure is feasible at this point in the race in order to overcome the deficit.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Andrew, who's calling from Burlington. Hey, Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi there.
I feel that the the results of people being mistrustful of the election results aren't being analyzed completely fully. There are many of us who feel worried about the election results, not because of the Russians and not because of possible voter fraud or mail problems, but because the Trump administration won't either let the vote go completely and be completely counted or won't accept the results. That's the one thing I have. The second thing I have to say is that I think that any Vermont elected governor would have done just fine with the pandemic. And I think that we need to have voters look at the complete campaign agendas of all the candidates and not simply say, well, he did a good job, therefore, you know, we elect him governor.
Okay, Andrew, thanks very much for your phone call. Paul, I just listening to national analysts talk about this election, I get the impression that, unlike many other years, we might not know who was elected president on Tuesday night, November 3rd.
That's right. Yeah, there are a number of states that look like they will be counting absentee ballots coming in for 3-4 days after Election Day. And some of those states are battleground states that really could make a difference. So that will be a real challenge in part for how people report, how journalists report the results and how candidates react to them, because they will be partial results. Now, here in Vermont, it seems likely that we will have a pretty full accounting on election night. That's because in Vermont, town clerks are allowed to do some work ahead of time, essentially feeding in absentee ballots into the ballot boxes. And we saw during the primary election, when there was a pretty big increase in, well, a very big increase in absentee balloting, that we still got election results on election night. So we may know the results here, but nationally, I think it is quite possible that things will be up in the air. If I could, Bob, I'd like to respond to what the caller said about, the importance of focusing on things that are not COVID in this gubernatorial election. I think that is that's the fight that David Zuckerman is trying to wage. He really wants to focus on the governor's vetoes of paid family leave bill, minimum wage bill, really focusing on these bread and butter economic issues where he thinks that, Vermonters might be more inclined to side with him. There are some very significant policy disagreements between these two candidates, but, there just hasn't been a lot of oxygen out there for really for anyone other than Phil Scott. The governor's on, he holds press conferences twice a week. They're broadcast here on VPR and elsewhere. And it's just so hard to gain traction right now, even as an incumbent lieutenant governor. I think Zuckerman is really struggling to break through. And part of that is just that there's limited bandwidth out there. Journalists are hard-pressed to cover all the huge issues that are happening right now. There are fewer journalists reporting right now due to economic problems in the industry. And there's so much national news right now. So it's just very difficult, I think, to get voters' attention. And so I think that means that voters are more likely to go with what they know, what they're familiar with, what they're comfortable with.
And if
Paul brings up a very interesting observation there.
He does. And I wanted to kind of piggyback off of that and saying, that this idea that Zuckerman is now focusing on issues that are not COVID. Certainly one of the ads we've seen starting to run recently on our air focuses on exactly what he was saying, that this idea, Governor Scott vetoed bills that would help you and your family. He did that. All of those things listed in this most recent ad that we've seen running are not related to COVID. I think because of the previous polls that have shown that Vermonters do approve of the job that Governor Scott is doing with COVID-19. So that isn't the weakness that he would need to hit to try to get, some traction in this particular win. But I do agree with Paul in saying that, there isn't, I think, a lot of, quite frankly, a lot of desire from people right now to focus on things that are not the pandemic, because it is so all-encompassing and almost every single area of life in the state right now has been affected by COVID-19, by this pandemic. And so that's where all of the kind of main lingering unanswered questions are in society right now. So if you were to ask somebody, what are you thinking about right now? You know, probably someone would tell you, well, I'm thinking about, you know, when this pandemic is going to be over, when there might be a vaccine, you know, what that might mean for me or my job. You know, they're not necessarily thinking about some of those bigger picture issues that on a normal year might come up in conversation, like if you were talking with people and they were telling you about what they would like to see. I think it's really pandemic, pandemic, pandemic when you talk with people out there, at least certainly the people that I'm hearing from.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Betsy, who is calling from Bristol. Hi, Betsy. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I do have some concerns about the fairness of the election, because certainly the foreign influence can discourage voters who believe the fake news that they see in social media. We've seen with the people filling out their if they don't mail their ballot back quickly, they might lose it or have it give it to somebody who doesn't turn it in where it should go. The third one is that the question of the ballot counters and whether or not they are properly trained. I have seen problems with that.
All right, Betsy, thank you very much. Of course, we have two ways of counting ballots in the state of Vermont. We have the optical scan machines, the tabulators, that's used for a majority of voters, but not, I believe, in a majority of towns. And as we mentioned earlier, in those tabulator towns, town clerks can start tabulating the votes within 30 days of the election. So if there is this crush of mail-in ballots, instead of people bringing them to the town clerk on election day, the town clerks with those machines do have the opportunity to feed those into the machine so that they don't have to do that all at the last minute. And there are some states in the country where the town clerks cannot count those ballots until election day itself. So you can see the delay that might take place. Let's focus on the race for Lieutenant Governor, Pete. We see Molly Gray at 35%, Scott Milne, the Republican candidate, at 31%, Molly Gray being the Democratic candidate, and not sure at 24%. So does that tell us this race is really up in the air?
This race, according to the poll, is a statistical dead heat. Like you said, Molly Gray, 35%, Republican Scott Milne, 31%. But when you factor in the margin of error in this poll, it is tied. You know, a lot of people think of the lieutenant governor's post as being sort of this constitutional anomaly in Vermont, but it's a really high stakes race. When you think about it, four of the last seven lieutenant governors have gone on to serve as either governor or in Congress to represent Vermont with its lone seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. And whoever does win this race is going to be very well positioned to ascend to a position of real political power in Vermont. Like you said, 24% of people say they're still undecided. And I think a lot of folks are maybe just now beginning to get to know who these candidates are. When you look at where the support is coming from among people who have made up their minds, you see a real partisan split here. Unlike Phil Scott, for example, who does very well with Democrats, Molly Gray's support is coming almost entirely from Democrats and a splash of independents. She's winning only 4% of Republican votes, only 9% of Democrats say they plan to vote for Scott Milne. And what's fascinating is we've noticed in recent weeks, both candidates sort of making overtures to people who may not be accustomed to voting for somebody with an R or a D next to their name. Scott Milne held a press conference earlier this week where he was endorsed publicly by Democratic Chittenden County Senator Debbie Ingram, who actually lost her bid for the Democratic nomination in the lieutenant governor primary last month. So two candidates really staking out centrist, moderate platforms in this campaign, trying to broaden their appeal. And based on the poll results, it could really go either way.
What do you think the key factors will be in determining this race, Pete? Do you think it's going to be determined by specific issues or more personalities and character?
I think it's going to come down to personality and character. I think it voters are going to, find an opportunity to listen to these candidates, to watch them. And it's how they're, how they sort of resonate with people on a human level. Certainly there are people out there who are issues-based voters, but the political science would suggest that by and large, that's not what voters base their decisions on at the ballot box. And it's the extent to which they connect with the candidate, the extent to which they trust them to make decisions on their behalves, that is the final determination, as opposed to, you know, taking down a list of top 10 issues and where the candidate falls on those.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Dan, who's calling from South Burlington. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. Just two things. One is, it'd be great to see the media community ask the hard questions of some of the Democratic reps in the same way that people ask Bill Scott to disavow anything Trump does. There's certainly extremist positions within the Democratic Party or participants at the convention there that ought to be taken to task. And nice to see the shoe put on the other foot. Secondly, with regards to Phil Scott, I mean, he's going to win re-election. He's popular, but it's a little bit like Barack Obama, who got reelected, but meanwhile lost state legislatures, lost control of Congress, et cetera. And so whether or not that strategy of continually caving to whatever the, you know, the mass majority here in the People's Republic demands is going to get him, he'll get reelected. But meanwhile, he's got overrun in the Global Warming Solutions Act. So what is his real power, if any, that he has? Thanks.
Okay, Dan, thanks for your comments. You know, one thing that is very interesting in the poll is how people intend to vote this year. As I mentioned, every active registered Vermont voter is being sent a ballot for the general election. In fact, in some communities, the ballots have already gone out. And in our VPR Vermont PBS poll, 45% of those people responding said they plan to vote by mail. They're going to send it back to their town clerk. 49% said they would vote in person. So, Paul, we have the prospect of almost half of all voters casting their ballots well before Election Day, because people have heard about possible delays with the post office, so they're being encouraged to mail them in soon. I'm wondering, what kind of impact does this have on the strategies of the various campaigns if you get to the middle of October and half the people have already voted?
Well, it's going to have a huge, huge impact on everything about this election. I think all you have to do is look back at the primary when we saw a turnout of more than 170,000 people in an August primary. That was nearly 40% higher than the previous record that had been set back in the year 2000. And in that election, in the primary election, voters were not sent ballots automatically. They were sent a postcard asking if they wanted a ballot. And that, even that, I think, really increased voter turnout. So in theory, the way this election is going to play out, I think we're going to see, just beyond record-breaking turnout. And that, I think, in some ways could really change the calculus of campaigns. It's harder to predict the outcome of an election when you don't really have a good sense of what the electorate is going to look like. Will this advantage one party or the other? We don't really know at this point. As you say, it also has a real impact on campaign tactics. It used to be that there was sort of a real pattern to elections where, the race sort of steadily heats up going into September, October, then the very last days before a November election. You might save money for a last push on TV or in postcards or whatever. You might save your best arguments or your best opposition research for later in the race when people are really focusing on the election. But right now, we have this really long period of time starting just earlier this week and going all the way through November, where people are going to be making their minds up at a different pace. You know, it's not just one election day. It's dozens and dozens and dozens of election days. So when do you make your best arguments? When do you spend your money? How do you spend it? And how do you focus on different voters at different times? So it's going to be really, really challenging. And I bet it'll take a few cycles, assuming that we continue to run elections this way in the future, which is not a given. But it may take a few cycles for campaigns and candidates to kind of adjust to this new way of voting.
And Kat, as you mentioned, David Zuckerman has started running some TV ads with very issue-oriented ads saying where he disagrees with Phil Scott on a number of critical issues. Do you think in part that's because Zuckerman realizes that a lot of people are going to be voting in the next 2 or 3 weeks and he needs to get his message out there fairly quickly?
I think any candidate right now, you know, realizes, like Paul just said, that you can't wait. You really can't wait until, you know, late October to try to make your, you know, make your stand, if you will. And also, I mean, I think it's worth noting that in this particular election, especially with the pandemic going on, the digital side of advertising and getting your message out is huge. You know, door knocks, you know, how many people really want strangers coming to their door at this particular moment? You know, so this idea of going out and shaking hands is not really feasible. And so as much as people would, you know, probably like to go out there and say, oh, well, I met this many, you know, Vermonters in every county. Well, that's, you know, not really great when people are staying indoors and trying not to have close contacts and trying not to see other people as much. So I think the campaigns, and I think this is where Molly Gray's campaign really succeeded earlier in, you know, the primary, was getting out on that digital front really early. You know, so if the Zuckerman campaign, for instance, is looking to, you know, make inroads, you know, they're going to be going full on this idea of how do you reach people in non-traditional, quote unquote, non-traditional ways. The reality is, you know, reaching people on social and reaching people in digital is not a new thing. But it's especially important when you lose some of those other avenues of getting to voters. And so the Zuckerman campaign could, you know, certainly, you know, if my inbox at work is any indication, is not shy about sending out those messaging emails to their, you know, the voters that they think they're likely to reach or might have a chance of reaching to try to make inroads there. And yeah, focusing on issues that are, you know, not necessarily COVID-19.
And Pete, you've taken a close look at this issue and how early voting might affect the strategy of different political campaigns. Are we seeing really sort of an upheaval or just a major change in the way that campaigns are being run because of the new early voting system?
Well, certainly there are things that are campaigns that are doing differently than they would have but for the advent of universal mail-in balloting. I was talking to David Zuckerman's campaign manager a few weeks ago, and she said, you know, we anticipate a lot of folks who did not find their ways to the polls in previous cycles, either because they are consumed with work, you know, can't get off that day, don't have the bandwidth to request an absentee ballot. Suddenly it shows up in their mail and the barrier to entry to the voting process is much lower. And so they're thinking, well, how do we tailor our message in ways that are going to appeal to that low propensity voter that hasn't historically participated in Vermont's elections? I think a lot of these campaigns are figuring it out as they go. And certainly there are going to be a lot of both campaign operatives and political scientists that look back on this year as a case study of sorts to see what the effect of universal vote by mail is on voter behavior.
Kat, you mentioned how COVID-19 is just a dominant issue and it seems to be towering over other issues in this campaign season. I found it interesting, the results of the poll, when people were asked about the future of their community, 65% said they were very optimistic or somewhat optimistic, compared to 22% who said that they were somewhat pessimistic or very pessimistic. Again, the results were bipartisan. Democrats and Republicans feel almost exactly the same way. People across Vermont have a pretty good feeling about what the future looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a lot easier to have here when you're, you know, case counts are in the, you know, the dozens instead of the hundreds or the thousands per day, you know, for COVID-19. You know, just having family in other parts of the country, I can tell you that, you know, the attitude towards, you know, how are we doing in battling this virus? And is it, you know, is our community safe? You know, can we go out and do the things we want to do, you know, albeit with some, you know, modifications to our behavior? You know, it's very different in, you know, say parts of California where my family is versus here. So I think in Vermont, it, you know, yeah, this, you know, COVID-19 is not necessarily split on, you know, a partisan line. So it would make sense then that, you know, people on both sides of the political spectrum would think that our community future looks pretty good at the moment, you know, especially given that, you know, we aren't having, you know, mass amounts of people sick in the hospital, dying, you know, and that kind of disruption to our, you know, to our daily lives. You know, it's, I wouldn't expect everybody to feel totally optimistic given that, you know, this has been a long 6 months and, you know, the, what we've heard is basically that, you know, people are kind of ready for this to be over and were a while ago. So I think it's easier, though, to have that kind of optimism when you look around your state and you don't see the level of destruction from this virus that you see in other parts of the country. And, you know, and you see, you know, leaders who are, you know, and you're in the opinion of many of these poll respondents doing their job pretty well during such a time.
Well, this has been a great discussion of the issues in the new VPR Vermont PBS poll. If you'd like to see more details about the poll, go to vpr.org. Many thanks to our panel today, Kat Villanzoni of WCAX-TV, Paul Heintz of 7 Days, and VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. Thank you all very much for being on the program today.
Thank you for having me,
Bob. Thanks, Bob.